Since Sukkot, we were learning some basic concepts, the subject of tefillah, davening. How you doing? Tefillah. To try to work through, I mean, it was really for 7 months or so, a certain theme. Bechlau, what does davening mean? How does davening work? There's much more to talk about over, could go on and on for many years on the subject, which is the essence of Yiddishkeit. Davening tefillah is the essence of Yiddishkeit. I want today, or tonight, to sort of introduce the new zman, to begin the zman. What we're going to be talking about in Mitzvah Shem from now until the Yom Tovim through the summer, to take some of the concepts that we've been talking about from the Sefer Chassidus, Maharal, and so on, Reb Chaim Volozhiner, and to try to apply these ideas and to see how they work in the Shemoneh Esrei, in Tefillah, in the fundamental, most basic part of Tefillah, Shemoneh Esrei. But in order to enter into that world of the Shemoneh Esrei, so I want to begin a little bit. This isn't by way of Chazara, a little bit is reviewing, but moving ahead. So in order to enter back into the world of Tefillah, we're going to talk a little bit about truth, about Emes and about Emunah, truth and faith. And I hope that within the next 15 to 20 minutes this will begin to make sense. Why is it that I'm talking about it? Mitzvah Shem it will. The Tzaddikim, Rabbi Nachman said, used to say that there's only one truth. If there's more than one truth, then already it's not true. Truth is only one. But the truth is that there are two types of truth. There are two types of truth. Although the truth is one, there are two types of truth. One type of truth is when the person is simply telling over a story. The person is describing something that he or she has seen, something that has been experienced. So this is a truth, a factual, informative truth, where the person is simply reporting something that he or she has seen or experienced. So it's true that we're sitting in this room, and it's true that there's a table, and there's papers and svarim. This is all true. And it's simply one's way to report the truth. That's one level of truth. The second level of truth, which is much more fascinating, is not a truth that reports something that already was, or simply a truth that informs. There's a second level of truth that has the power to create. Whereas in the first way of truth, there's a certain fact, and that fact causes that truth. The second way of truth is that there's a certain truth that can cause a fact to take place. And I want to explain, because this is everything what tefillah is about. So in order to explain, I want to mention something in halacha. Because here, there's a concept in halacha that will help us clarify this idea. All of you know that the Torah has taught that in order for us to verify the truth, in most circumstances we need two witnesses, correct? It's called Eidus. Eidus, testimony. You need two witnesses. Al-pi-shnayim ha-shlosha Eidim yokum davar. We need Eidim. Eidus, testimony. Now we have Eidus ba'al-peh. There's oral testimony. And there's Eidus b'shtar. There's written testimony, which is called a shtar, or a legal document. A halachically valid legal document. So, all of the Rishonim, and it's even in the Gemara, is asking a question: how is it possible how is it possible to accept testimony in writing? In other words, how is it possible to accept a written document as halachically valid? How is that possible? Since we have a rule, an ironclad principle in halacha, mipi shnayim edim, from the mouths of the two witnesses, and Chazal say, mipihem velo mipi ksavam, from their mouths and not from their writing. In other words, the Torah seems to demand, the Torah does demand, that testimony be given orally by the witnesses. Mipi shnayim edim, from the mouth of the two witnesses, and Chazal say, mipihem velo mipi ksavam. Mipihem, from their mouths and not from their writing. Therefore, Eidus has to be spoken, has to be told. They have to testify in court. So this is the question that they're all asking. How is it possible for a shtar, for a document to be legal when it's signed by the witnesses, if we have a rule that tells us, if we have a rule that tells us that the Eidim have to testify about Peh? How could that be? So the Me'iri, one of the great Rishonim, the Me'iri makes the following distinction. The Me'iri says that there are two types of edus, there are two types of testimony. One type of testimony is when two witnesses are telling over something that they saw, something that happened. That's one kind of edus. They're reporting a fact. On Rosh Chodesh Iyar, we saw Reuven steal this from Shimon. But they're reporting something they had seen that they had experienced in the past. Such edus, the Me'iri tells us, such testimony has to be spoken, has to be said, mipihem, from the mouths of the witnesses. However, if you take another situation, for instance, we shouldn't know from it, a get, unless you need to know from it, God forbid, a get, a divorce. So everybody knows that a get is a valid halachic document that's signed by witnesses. And witnesses that watch it being given from the husband to the wife, or from the husband to the messenger, or from the messenger to the messenger, but the actual shtar, the actual document, is created by the Eidim who have signed it. The Eidim signed the get. They signed the bill of divorce. So the Me'iri asks, how could that be? What about the rule, mipi envelo mipi ksavim? What about the rule that testimony has to be given orally? So how could a bill of divorce be valid if the edus is in writing? It's not baal peh, it's not oral. So the Me'iri says that the difference is that whereas in the first case the edim come and they're reporting a fact that on that day we saw so and so steal from him, or we saw this murder take place, or whatever it is, there the edus has to be oral. When the emes, when the truth is being revealed, when the facts are simply being reported, then it has to take place in that way. However, a get is a different business. Here, the point is that the Eidim are not reporting something that once happened. Here, there's a truth that is created by the testimony of the witnesses. You understand? When the witnesses say that Reuven is divorcing his wife, Rachel, whatever, and this divorce is taking place in our presence, so the Me'iri explains that here the rule is Eidei Chasima Karati. I mean, there's a discussion in the Gemara and Gittin, which there's no need to get you involved in. But the point is that here the edus, the testimony, creates divorce. It's not telling us something that once happened. It's not testimony to tell us that this is what we're telling you now. There's a certain thing. We're telling you the truth. This once happened that so-and-so took something from the other person. That's not what they're doing. There's a second function of edus, which is to create the numitzis, to create a new reality. Very good. Also, although they're reporting something that they've seen, the concept by the Eidei HaChodesh, by the witnesses for the new month, it's also, everybody can look up in the sky. We don't need anybody to tell us whether there's a new moon. I mean, is that real testimony? I mean, the thing seems a little bit crazy, no? As far as testifying that there's a new moon. So a million people can look up in the sky and the whole world knows they can take pictures that there's a new moon. So obviously, it's a very good example. Obviously, the Eidus there, it's not for the purpose of reporting some fact or informing. The Eidus there is somehow that Hashem gave the mysterious power to his children, to the Jewish people, that by the utterance of their mouths of two official witnesses, who are Shomer Mitzvos and who are not related to each other, that by their utterance, it's now Nisan, it's now Iyar, it's Hanai Ezach, a new thing has happened in the world. Something new has happened. And that can be, the enemy, he says, there's no restriction of mi pihem velo mi piksavim. The restriction as far as Edom reporting something orally, as opposed to in writing, that's only when they're reporting a fact that they have seen. This is what the Meiri explains. But in terms of that second type of Edus, which is for the purpose of creating a new sense of reality, so that can be done orally. So from this Meiri, using this halacha, we are introduced to this distinction. We'll see how this plays into tefillah, into amun, into a lot of deep things. We see the distinction between Eidus des Misaperes es Hametzius, it tells the story of something that was, and Eidus, or truth, that has the power to create something in the future. Now, let me bring this into a more comfortable place, a little bit away from halacha, and into a more comfortable situation. The story of the spies. The story of the spies in the Chumash. So the 10 spies, the 10 Meraglim, these were extraordinary tzaddikim. So the 10 spies came back and they told the truth. Lemais, they told the truth. What did they say? Well, they said the truth was that Eretz Yisrael is a very, very difficult land to conquer and that there are giants that are living there and these are unconquerable people. Lemais, they were right. I mean, they told the truth. So the spies come back and they say, Ha'aretz Eshor Avarnu Ba Losero, so the land that we had passed through to spy, to see, Eretz Ocheles Yeshvehi, it's a land that consumes those who live there. Misham Reinu is on Nephilim B'nei Ha'anak, and we saw in that place the Nephilim, the B'nei Ha'anak, the giants, and so on. And that's true. They're legitimate witnesses, and they were reporting what they had seen. And they told the truth. They told the truth. But the Baruch Shalom was so upset. It caused such sorrows. We're still reeling in pain from those sorrows. And Eretz Yisrael still slipping sometimes through our fingers because of that. Because of that, what? I mean, what happened, Lamaisa? They didn't say anything that was wrong. They didn't say anything that was wrong. It was true. But then let's see what Yehoshua and Kalev said. Yeshua and Kalev didn't report what they had seen. They didn't say, because what did they have to add? The Lamaisa, the country was a difficult country, and there were very dangerous people living there. And the truth is that militarily, speaking from a military, from the perspective of those who would are more concerned with military strategy, there would be no legitimate rationale to undertake the conquest of such a place. So along came Kalev and Yeshua, and they never ever mention anything in the past tense. They don't say Avarnu, Ra'inu, we went through that land, we saw the giants, because that's an Eidus, that is the testimony of people who are reporting something that they had once seen. And because of that Eidus, because of that testimony, the 10 spies, the Jewish people lost courage. And they were discouraged, and they fell into despair, and all the terrible things that were the result of despair, and despair never brings anything good. It all came from the Eidus of what those 10 acceptable witnesses had seen. So along came Kalev and Yeshua, and they said, Im chafetz Hashem banu, vehev yosanu l'haretz hazos, v'nos nalanu. If Hashem desires us, in the future, here, if Hashem desires us, if He wants us, He will bring us into this land and He will give it to us. So what are they telling us? Kalev and Yeshua could be called dreamers. They weren't realistic, because the other spies reported very accurately what they had seen. And Kalev and Yeshua were talking about what we could see, what could be. It's not now, but the way it should be. There is such a thing in the world. This is the opening to tefillah. If you don't believe in this, tefillah is meaningless. Davening is meaningless. There is such a thing that when there's strong chafetz and rotzen, desire and will, that it, one then enters into the second category of edus, of testimony, where I'm not simply reporting something that I had seen, because the spies did report accurately, the 10 spies, they saw that. But Kalev and Yeshua said that the Jewish people function in a different level of emes, in a different type of truth, a truth of what we want there to be in the world, a truth of what there should be, of what could be. And how could it be? So they said, Im chafetz Hashem banu, if we are loyal to Hashem, Im chafetz Hashem banu, then the land is ours. Because the human being was given the power through his tefillahs and through his rots and through his davening and his will to create a new reality, to create mamash metzias that wasn't there before, to change something, to bring something new to the world. Let me explain this a little bit more. Ever since we're children, we're saying in benching, I was a young man and I'm an old man, and I've never seen a tzaddik abandoned, nor have I ever seen the children of a tzaddik hungry for bread. And I remember as a child, I was already very disturbed by that, because it seemed to me that all the tzaddikim that I met, dafka, their children were the hungriest. When we went to see family in Williamsburg, and to me, they all looked like tzaddikim, of course, as a child. They still do. So I saw that they were, you know, by my cousins, how much they were lacking. They were so God-fearing. They were such good Jews, and they were so connected to Torah. And then I would come back and sit in my comfortable house with all my little friends who lived for the Yankees and Mets, and we were saying, I've never seen the tzaddik's children hungry. If not for my father's regular stipends and the checks that he would send over to the mishpacha, they wouldn't have had a thing to eat. So what's v'lo reisi tzaddik nezov v'zam avakesh lachem? What do you mean we haven't seen? What do you mean we haven't seen? So what does it mean? It's simply not true. You've never seen a tzaddik neglected, nor have you seen his children hungry. It's not true. So the Gemara asks this. You know, Chazal, they're not afraid. The Gemara asks this in Yevamos, Tezayin. So the Gemara asks this. And the Gemara's response to the question of, it's almost incredulous. We don't see the children of tzaddikim being hungry. Other rabbi, we see in the world that it seems that the wicked are satiated, and those who are tzaddikim are dafka hungrier. So what's the meaning of this? So the Gemara says, Pasuk zeh, this pasuk of lo raisi tzaddik nezov, the sar shel olam amru. This pasuk was not said by a human being. This pasuk was said by the sar ha'olam, the sar shel olam. What's the Sar Ha'olam? Some sort of a Malach. A Malach said it. A human being didn't say this pasuk. A Malach said it. That's the Gemara's answer. So, it's a mystery for us to try to understand that. Our lives, mamash, depend on understanding these things. Really, if we want to be sincere Jews, we have to understand these things. So what does that mean? Some Sar Shel Olam, Ishkayach, Amalek says the pasuk. We can't say such a pasuk. We say it in benching all the time. Dafke, after you finish eating, you say such a pasuk. Lo Reisi Tzadik Nezav, Azam Vakish Lachem. So it seems the Gemara is telling us that Sar Shalolam, some sort of a master or a minister, some master of the world, whoever it is, Maluch, the meaning of it is, in Mitzias, in reality, if we're going to function, if we're going to live like the 10 spies, in reality, we see tzaddikim nazovim. We see many tzaddikim who appear abandoned. And we see many children who are hungry. And we see innocent people being killed. But there's a madrega that's called the Sar HaOlam. There's a madrega, there is such a thing that a person can rise above the Metzias that he sees with his eyes. That a person can rise above that reality that strikes him by its presence. And a person can touch that way of the Sar HaOlam, where the person doesn't see what that which exists in the world. The person doesn't see that which is, but the person sees the way that it should be. And the person sees the way that it should be, and because of that vision, the person himself is filled with a tremendous tefillah, a longing and a hope that things should be the right way, where the tzaddikim are not nezovim, where the tzaddikim are not neglected, and the children are not hungry, because that's the way things are supposed to be. And we don't understand why they're not that way. But when a person is filled with that hope and that desire and that tefillah, there is such a thing that through the hope of the Jewish people and through the hope of any person, of any good person, of any Jew that tries to say a kapitel tehillim, that tries to open up his or her mouth with tefillah, with a cheshek and rotzen, if you believe in something that could be, if you believe that something could be, even though the metzias, even though reality is screaming at you that it's not and it can't be, but if you believe in the creator of the world, then reality will have a different taste. And it'll be different. Not a delusion. We're not talking about somebody fooling himself. You know, the mun tasted like anything you wanted it to. The mun in the desert, the food that we ate, tasted like anything you wanted it to. So you have certain people that they were living in the desert and all they could think of were like tam-tams and herring. And then you had other people that they used to think of a rib steak. Rib steak, fries. Yeah, it's a difference from one person to the other, you know. There's a big difference, not in terms of what you see, because these two Jews would see in front of their eyes the same funny-looking crystal type of gook, whatever that was. They looked at the same metzias. But one person could only envision a piece of herring. And the other person could envision a rib steak. It's a difference. The Rebbe Mitzvah Lavorka said that was the greatest kindness that one Jew could do for another in the desert, because there everything was taken care of by Hashem. So what could you do? What kind of chesed could you do for a Jew in the desert? And you have to have chesed, because the whole world functions only through chesed. So what could one Jew do for another in the desert? So he said that one Jew could walk over to another one and say, Rebbe, what are you thinking of when you're having them on? So this Yid would say, I have a cracker and a herring. What does a Jew have in mind? So he says, what are you talking about? You know, we used to be Mitzrayim, we used to be in Egypt, so you had such small hasagas, we were slaves, so what does a slave have a piece of herring and a cracker? But now you're a Ben Yisrael, you're a free person, what are you thinking so small thoughts? You have to think big thoughts. And if you want it, it'll taste the way that you want. That was the chesed that one Jew could do for another in the desert, to give the person bigger hasagas. It's still a chesed that we could do in the desert. When you go to a Jew and you give that Jew a longing for something bigger, when you ignite within another Jew a tefillah for something better than what he has. Now, I don't mean a better kitchen. It doesn't mean a better piece of property or a better dressed wife or kids or husband. That's not it. But mom is something better. A cheshek for something better. To ignite in a person such a cheshek, what a gewaldige chesed. It's the biggest chesed in the world. To give another Jew a rotzen for something better. To make himself into something. To build himself up. To give a Jew a cheshek to learn a little bit more. To daven a little bit better. You give a Jew a cheshek to stay away from Lashon Hara. You talk to him about these things. So listen. The greatest Jew that we know of is Moshe Rabbeinu. Chazal tell us that when Moshe Rabbeinu sang the song, Oz Yashir, when he sang the song, he corrected a mistake that he had made earlier in his life. you remember that at a point in an early stage of the Geula, of the redemption, before things started to turn in a better direction, Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of Parashat Shmos comes to Hashem with a complaint. May Oz Basi El Paral Odav Bishmecha Hatzalei Tzaltas Amecha. Ever since I came to speak Hashem in your name to Paro on behalf of the Jewish people, not only have you not saved them, but now the straw has been taken away from them. It's worse, worse. The Tzara Zatara. It's worse. So Chazal tell us that was a mistake. It was a terrible mistake. And they receive in Parshas Vayera that Hashem is saying, I is given good by the obvious. They didn't ask me such questions by Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. But by you, Moshe Rabbeinu, it's me Oz Basi Al Paro. You have tainus with Oz. Since I've come to Paro, it's gotten worse. So Chazal tells that the way of a tzaddik is that when he makes a mistake, he corrects it in the same thing. So the Moshe Rabbeinu corrects the Me'oz Bozi Al Paro, that mistaken sentence of despair, he corrects it with what Oz Yoshe Moshe. Then Moshe Rabbeinu will sing. And everybody knows that Rashi tells us that that's the source of Tchias HaMesim. What does it mean, then he will sing? So it means then the it's talking about that at some point in the future the dead will come back to life and will continue singing. We'll pick up the song. So how is the Oz Yoshe correcting the Me'oz Basi El Paro? So the answer could be that when Moshe Rabbeinu came and told that the Jewish people don't have straw, I mean that now they don't have, it's worse, and ever since I'm working for you, it's gotten worse. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. So what Moshe Rabbeinu was looking at was the Metzius, was reality. He was looking at the reality. He saw the facts, and the facts, when reported, were bleak. It was mamash terrible. The truth of the 10 spies. The truth of a person with a piece that's thinking of, that's dreaming of a piece of herring and a cracker instead of a rib steak. The truth was that things had gotten worse. And that was a mistake. Because Hashem's Baruch told Moshe Rabbeinu that a Jew has to look at things in a bigger way. And I'm much deeper than you could ever imagine. Hashem is saying, I'm just beginning to work something out. Daven and scream and want and hope for. Rise up to the place of the Sar HaOlam, of that angel from above that can look at reality and turn away from it and say, V'lo reisi tzaddik nezov, I don't see a neglected tzaddik. I see the world the way that it should be. I see the world the way that it should be. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu comes with the Oz Yashir to correct me Oz Basi El Paro. His mistake was to look at the facts as he had seen them, to report with the Eidus, that emes of what a person has already seen. And Hashem built Moshe Rabbeinu up to a point where he'd be able to not report what he had seen, but to report what he is going to see. What the Jewish people have to look forward to. And that's Vayomer Lamer. And they continue singing, and they continue saying, till the end of time. Because if not for this, the Jewish people wouldn't have been able to survive. Not the Churban, not the Crusades, not the Holocaust. And one Jewish person wouldn't be able to survive. His own personal tzaris, lo aleinu. If it were not for the Oz Yashir, if it were not for the ability to be able, as the Jewish people have, to look at reality, to look at reality, and to turn away from it with a tefillah for something that's going to be. And it's with the koach of those tefillahs that the reality is altered. It's with the koach of those tefillahs we bring that change in reality through the koach of our shira, of our tefillah, of our hoping, and of our longing, and of our emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And emunah is not something that we just believe in, something that was. I believe that Hashem exists. I believe that Hashem gave us the Torah. Emunah is something that causes things to happen. Emunah, faith in Hashem, is a faith in the promises of Tanakh. It creates reality. It changes the entire universe. It's not just to report something that was. It's to make something be. Rabbi Nachman taught that the words that we say all the time before benching in the Shem Alas, Bo yovo berina nose alumosav. So everybody knows in Tehillim that those words mean that even though the Jewish people have gone through such unbelievable tsaros, it's going to come to a time of hayinu kechalmim, that the entire galus will be like a dream. And bo yovo berina nose alumosav means that every Jew will come with great joy, carrying all the packages, all the bundles. From all the emunah and all the belief that the Jewish people have lived with throughout history, we mamish couldn't understand, we couldn't see, but we nevertheless persevered and we davened for the future. So when Mashiach will come, it's going to be revealed that it's with the koch of our tefillos that we were able to bring about the geula, that we were able to bring about the redemption. Therefore, Rabbi Nachman said that the words bo yovo berina no se alumosav, bo is a beis, yovo is a yud, berina, bo yovo berina no se alumosav. You don't need the first one. Yovo berina is yud, beis, no se is nun, alumosav is an aleph, spells navi, spells prophet. What was that? So Rabbi Nachman taught that it's not just the prophets who are able to see the future. Every Jewish person is called a Navi. The Jewish people as a whole are called Nevi'im B'nei Nevi'im, prophets, the children of prophets. Because Rabbi Nachman taught that if the Jewish people wouldn't have been able to believe in the future and to look forward to the future and to create the future, then the present and the past was so miserable and so horrible that we would have no reason to go on. Because Jewish reality has been no cause for us to live in the world. Rabbi Nachman used to also say that I heard of an Olam Haba and I heard of an Olam Hazeh. Olam Haba I believe in. Olam Hazeh I haven't seen. I'm supposed to have seen it, I haven't seen it. Olam Haba they told me to believe in, so I haven't seen it, I believe in it. But this world, he says, all I see is a Gehenna. That's what Rabbi Nachman said. I just see a Gehenna with misery and suffering. So what that means is that every single Jewish person, Yovo Barina knows Elumosov, the taste of something better, to have that Amunah in something better that's coming up, something better that's waiting for us, that every Jew has to be a little bit of a Navi. That's why Rabbi Nachman once explained, which I've told you in the past, those of you that have been to different classes, it's the nature of a person, when a person experiences pain, something very painful, to close the eyes. To go like, right? To squint. To squint. When a person experiences pain, to squint. Why is that? So Ibn Nachman said, because when a person is experiencing pain, it contradicts the present moment. There shouldn't be pain. Why do I have this pain? So the only thing the person can do is to squint, because when a person squints, he's trying to see something in the future. When you want to see something far away, you squint. So Ibn Nachman says that the natural instinct is that when a person experiences pain, to squint, because the person's present is too painful to acknowledge. So the person is looking for something beyond this moment. So you're squinting like looking out beyond the horizon to see something after this moment, because you can't live with the moment. That's why we cover our eyes when we say Shema Yisrael. Because Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad is not just a statement of facts. We're not just reporting a fact. We're talking about what we're hoping for Hashem to be revealed in this world, and we haven't seen. We heard from our Zaydis and our Babis what we haven't seen, and we want to see it. So we close our eyes to this world. It's like concentrating on something beyond this world, to see something after the world. And there's no other way to explain the existence of the Jewish people, the continued existence of Knesset Yisrael, if not for this ability to be attached to a level of Amunah, of Emes, that creates something for the future, that causes something to happen, that changes things that happen. Not just an Emes that tells the truth the way that we see it, but an Emes which is mamish true. Like Yeshua and Kalev said, Im Chofetz Hashem Banu, if Hashem wills, the land is ours. And so it was. that Eretz Yisrael is ours. V'kach hayah. Even though the Parshat, the simple Metzias, couldn't bear that out, but Im Chofetz Hashem banu. But there's a condition, there's a way, there's something that's necessary for this to work. It's a good system. But there's something that's necessary. And I have spoken about it many times in the past, because it's something which is very, very important to me. And it's important to give over to Jews. Because we've heard a lot of things that contradict this. There's a famous teaching from the B'ditcheva, from the Kedushas Levi, where the B'ditcheva explains why is it that in the Torah Pesach is called Chag HaMatzos. This is a very famous teaching. Pesach is called Chag HaMatzos in the Torah, but we call it Pesach. So the B'ditcheva said, Ani l'dodi v'dodi li, I for my beloved is for me. So Hashem in His Torah calls it Chag HaMatzos because He wants something to say about His beloved. Because the way of people, when they love each other, they're always looking to say good things about each other. So Hashem calls it Chag HaMatzos to remember how the Jewish people ran into a desert and they didn't even have time to bake anything. They mamish went after Him. So Hashem calls it Chag HaMatzos. Because Hashem must speak lovingly about His children. And we call it Chag HaPesach because we want to say something beautiful about how Hashem, even though we weren't worthy, Hashem skipped over the homes and let us live and took us out. So we call it Pesach and Hashem calls it Chag HaMatzos. I for my beloved is for me. That's what Rabbi Yitzchak said. It's a very deep teaching. Well, let's understand it in a little... Let's understand a little bit more. We know the Chazal have taught us that Hashem keeps all the mitzvahs. Hashem observes all the commandments. So it says in the Gemara that Hashem puts on tefillin. Well, the Gemara asks, what does it say in Hashem's tefillin? It says, Mikam Chisrael Goyachad Baritz. Who can be compared to the Jewish people? They're one unique people in the whole world. You know, it's our tefillin to speak about Hashem's praises. Hashem is unique. And Hashem's tefillin, it says that we're unique. So Chazal tells that Hashem observes all the mitzvahs. So what's the most basic mitzvah of all? Belief. Emunah is the foundation of all mitzvahs. Dovid HaMelech said, Kol mitzvah yisarcha emunah. Emunah is the basis of all belief, of all mitzvahs. Believing in Hashem. If you don't believe in Hashem, the mitzvahs are meaningless. So I was thinking, how does Hashem observe that mitzvah? Whatever it means that Hashem puts on tefillin, it's obviously not something physical. Shabbos, Hashem keeps Shabbos. Has Hashem believe that He believes in Himself? That's not a chochmah. So we have a teaching, Baruch Hashem, from the tzaddikim, from the Rebbe from Alexander, from Rabbi Heinichel from Alexander, who taught. So when we say that in Tehillim and Davening, Lahagid Baboker Chazdercha Ve'Manoscha Balelos, to speak about His kindness in the morning and His faithfulness at night, Ve'Manoscha Balelos, Mizma Shel Yom HaShabbos, Ve'Manoscha Balelos. So Rabbi Henochel said, in the beginning of the pasuk you're saying to speak about Hashem's kindness, and then in the end you say Ve'Manoscha Balelos, and some of the translations will have it, and our faith in the night. Because how do you speak about Hashem's faith? So then they translate it as loyalty or faithfulness. But Rabbi Henochel says, no, it means emunah. So what does it mean? It means that Hashem believes in the Jewish people. We observe the mitzvah of faith by believing in Hashem. And Hashem observes the mitzvah of emunah by believing in us. No. Even balelos, meaning even when a Jewish person is going through a terrible, terrible time of concealment, when he's so hidden even from himself, that God forbid the person is doing things that he shouldn't be doing. Nevertheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu believes in every Jew. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has emunah in a Jew. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows who we are. It's an emunah that's complete, total. A complete consuming faith that Hashem has in every Jew. So I was thinking that it's because of Hashem's emunah in us, it's because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's faith in the Jewish people, in the Jewish person, that we're able to become, not just to be, but we're able to become. If you don't believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu believes in you, despite all your shortcomings and mistakes, it's almost impossible to daven. It's almost impossible to believe in Him. If you think that Hashem despises you, God forbid, if you think that Hashem has rejected you and has turned away from you, you know, the Torah was created before the world, you know that? There's only one thing that existed before the Torah, what's that? Before. Yisrael Olam Machshava Tchila. Hashem's thought to create the Jewish people, Hashem's love for the Jewish people existed before the Torah. No, it was before creation the Torah already existed. But Yisrael Olam Machshava Tchila. But the Jewish people existed before the thought of the Torah existed. In that world where before and after don't mean anything to us. Before the creation of the world, there was no time. But Chazal have revealed to us that before there was a concept of a Torah in Hashem's mind, whatever that means, there was a concept of a couple of Jews sitting someplace and learning Torah. Already in Hashem's mind, He conceived of that. That tells us that even before a Jew is keeping Torah properly, he's still a Jew. Even before he's conceived of changing his life, Hashem has conceived of him changing his life. And mikoach, and from the energy of Hashem's belief in what that person can be and will be, the person becomes that way. The person can become, can change. So what holds us back from davening? What's called in the Sfar HaKadoshim false humility, impure humility. What I gave you, if you look on, this is from the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, Taf Resh Lamed Gimel. The first side is Taf Resh Lamed Gimel. We'll have to do it very quickly. The page number is Taf Resh Lamed Gimel. There are two sides to the same page. Taf Resh Lamed Gimel, on the left-hand column, where it says, V'achar Hatzoh Azu. The Toldos Yaakov Yosef is the first Chassidic Sefer that was ever written, and therefore was also burned on many occasions. So Toldos was Rabbi Yaakov Yosef of Polonia, one of the great Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov, who is the most authentic source of the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov, which is one we're going to see right now from the Baal Shem Tov. V'achat sozu tovin ki gam banovet tzorach lefami mi de benin yisvu tzorach gavol ma'od kamo shamat mi mori. I heard from my teacher, from my Rebbe, that's the Baal Shem Tov, that even when it comes to humility, one has to be careful that it should be properly balanced. If a person is too humble, that causes him to drift away from Hashem. Because of his humility, because he's so low in his own eyes, and he can't believe Shefa el kol ha'olam is, because of the person's low status in his own eyes, because he's so low in his own eyes, he can't possibly believe that with his davening, he can mamish draw into the all worlds, all kinds of shefa and brocha. The person doesn't believe that. El kol ha'olam is, v'gam ha'malachim nizayin al de terasa tefiloso. And the malachim are being fed and sustained by the tefilas and the terrors of every Jew. If a Jew would really believe this, how he would serve Hashem with joy, with simcha, how he wouldn't sit with a siddur and fall asleep over an ashray, if he realized that with his words, Imamish is giving life to all worlds. The malachim are being fed from his tefillas. Every single thing in the universe is waiting with its tongue out for an ashray from a Jew.
Vayaniza b'chol ois, he would be careful with every letter of davening, a tnuah on every single tnuah, every single trup, movement of the letters, a mila and word, la'imra k'dekayos, to say properly. He would say the words properly. V'gam lost his label, mashomar, and you would concentrate on what you're saying. And look what David HaMelech says, im tishkivun ben svasayim, says in Tehillim, if you lie between the shores, and the explanation of the Baal Shem Tov was, Shakadosh Baruch Hu shomer v'shoyked al sifsei ha'odam, that the word svasayim, which means the shore or the beach, also means svasayim, means lips. So Shakadosh Baruch Hu is waiting by the lips of a Jewish person, shomer v'shoyked al sifsei ha'odam l'noishka. Listen to what the Baal Shem Tov said. That Hashem is standing, Hashem is watching by the lips of a Jewish person. And when that Jewish person says a word of tefillah, Hashem is waiting to kiss those lips. That's what the Baal Shem, these are the Baal Shem Tov's words. Kishu oimer b'tayru tefillah b'tchila rechim. When you say a word of davening, learning with fear and with awe, with love, with devotion. V'im yosem elav libo, if you would pay attention to Hashem standing by your lips waiting to give you a kiss. B'vaday mizeh ha'isha shelo yechzen l'resis v'zeya. Who wouldn't be gripped by awe and by wouldn't begin to tremble, thinking Shahamelach God of an Irish Shem Evishayk El Svasayim Shalodim, that the great and awesome King is standing mamish by your lips. Adam Nivze Chadal Ishem, a weak and frail person, Kayotze Bezer, but he's waiting there by you mamish. Vumein Mashom Chazal and Visnusa Shabbeschaya Garm Churban, and it's the famous Gemara that comes to Rakamsa, that the humility of Zechariah ben Avkulis brought to the destruction of the temple. That's the whole story in the Gemara that we're going to right now. Kacha adam roi losum leif. A person should pay attention, should concentrate. V'loimer and say, and should realize, ki usula mutzav artza, that he is a human being, is like a ladder, and the bottom of that ladder is on earth. V'roi shamagia shamayma, but the top of the human being reaches into the heavens. V'chol tnuosav, and every single movement of a Jew, v'dibur, and every word. The hiluch and step, vasakiv, and everything he does, oiseroishim lamala lamala, causes an amazing thing to happen, creates something lamala lamala in all the worlds. Even if you don't see it right now in this world, it creates something lamala lamala. But vadi, if he knew this, yezara b'chaldroch, if he'd be so careful with everything that he did. Sheyel l'shem shemayim, that it should be for the sake of heaven. Masha'enikem b'cheshev adam ma'an yisof from lufkom. Who am I? What if a person thinks I'm mamish, a worthless, defiled, and crippled creature? L'sak l'malu l'mata she'enishim kaliske l'malu. Who am I that the circumstances of my life could possibly in any way affect what happens in the universe? U'bezahalach b'shirus libo so b'meila. You know how a person is, that if a person feels that what he's saying is worthless and his life is worthless, then he begins to live a worthless life and he begins to say words that are meaningless. Because what's the tachlis? If I would be Reb Moshe Feinstein, if I would be Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, then I would be also like them. I would be like them if I would be them. But because I'm me, so I do the things that I do. But the Baruch Shlomo is mamish waiting and watching. The Yomach Shalom Yelig, a person begins to give up. Be'emes Ze'eno, this is not true. Ki Ha'adam, the truth is Ha'adam, the human being, like they Ma'isev Hatayvim through his good actions, who Dovik by his Baruch Mamish. He's Mamish attached to Hakadosh Baruch Hu. K'may Shekosav Alach to Bedrocha, Vayidei Shu Rachem Lamat in the Sari Midazu Shu Rachem Lamal. B'chalayim is that when a Jew is compassionate down here in this world, it awakens the mid of compassion in Hashem. That the Baal Shem Tov taught, it says in the Mishnah Avos, you should know what's above you. But the Baal Shem Tov taught, in other words, Dam Alamala. You should know that everything that exists above is Mimcha. It's from you down here below. That if you have compassion, then there will be compassion upon you and the whole world. That's the prerequisite. That's how tefillah works. That's how it works. If a person doesn't think this, if you think that because of things that have happened in life, that your tefillahs are just falling out of your mouth and saying, someone comes over and he says, do me a favor, somebody is sick, can you say Tehillim? And you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm going to say Tehillim, and you know, maybe it's better not, because if they see me, if Hashem sees me in the chevra, it's going to mess things up. You know, you've never thought, I mean, I've thought this, I think this is, it's easy, I go around teaching all these things, but then I fall into all these problems and mistakes and stupidities. You think, it's better I shouldn't. Why do I have to mess up such a nice group of people with my tilling? The Rosh Hashanah's going to see, oh, there's Weinberg in the middle of all this. Well, what's going to be? So that's how we think. It's so warped. And you know, unfortunately, it comes to a great extent from, it's not always, but it has a lot to do with our education and upbringing, sometimes in the house, sometimes in the yeshivas. We heard, you could tell every Jewish child from the time that he's 3 years old knows what mida keneged mida means. Everybody knows that you get smacked and you get hurt. But what does it mean that Hashem stands by your lips and gives you a kiss when you say a good word, and that your tefillahs make a difference? Who talks about such things? You go into the yeshivas, the children see their own rabbis and their own Rosh Yeshivas so many times that the Rosh Yeshivas, they come into davening late, and they stand there looking at a sefer for half the time of davening. But the big tzaddikim was never like that. Rav Moshe Feinstein used to daven. I saw by my rabbi, Rav Dov Lifshitz, how he used to daven. The tefillahs, they were once saying to the Chassam Sofer. People were upset because the Chassam Sofer used to say Shemoneh Esrei for hours, you know. The Chassam Sofer. And people were upset because somebody scammed the Rebbe. If the Rebbe wouldn't daven so long, we would have twice as many tshuvas, and we'd have so much more halach in the world. Because the Rebbe's so busy davening, it takes up. So the Chassam Sofer looked at him, and he said, what are you talking about? If not for my tefillah, I couldn't write a word. If not for my davening, I couldn't open my mouth. We're so lost from this. Maybe we believe that the tzaddik davens yet. No. You know, how many stories have you all heard about? There was a tzaddikim, there was a tzaddik, you know, by the Divrei Chaim, by the Sanzerov and the Kotzk, it's well known, by the Kotzk and the Sanzerov, when people would come to them, the best bracha you could get from them, they start to scream and yell at you. It's the best bracha. It's a maisa from the Lel of his daughter, that she came with her mother, with the Rebbetzin. It's late. She came with the Rebbetzin. This was the daughter of the Lelev, you understand? Royalty. But she hadn't had children. She was married for some years, so she came with her mother. They came to the Kotzke. The Kotzke you heard of, no? The Mendel from Kotzk. A fire. So they came to the Kotzke, and they walk in there to the Kotzke, you understand? They had servants carrying their things, and they walk in their furs. It's all seen. A Rebbe's daughter and a Rebbe's wife. They come in there, and the mother is standing there with the daughter and says, Holy Rebbe from Kotzk, I'm the wife of the Lelever, of David Lelever, and this is my daughter, the daughter of David Lelever. And she's been married already for a few years and hasn't had a child. So. While 100 people stood outside the door waiting to see the Rebbe, of course the Rebbe and the daughter were allowed in first. So the Kotzke looked up and said, why should I give a bracha to this pile of bones? He started screaming at her curses, you worthless dog, how dare you bother me? And the girl ran out of there terrified, crying, and the mother, you know, Rabbitson, she was going to stay, and the Kotzke started screaming at her and stood up and said, you get out of here too, and started yelling at her. And the two of them left the room, and outside the mother goes over the door and is holding, and she's crying and crying. This is a bracha. You came for a bracha. It's like with Bilam the opposite. You understand? So, after a little while, so the Rebbetzin goes back in. And she says, I don't understand. How dare you do that? I don't care if you're the biggest Rebbe in the world. I myself am a Rebbetzin. I see my husband. He's so sweet and kind. How could you talk that way? So the Kotzke said, bring your daughter in. So she brought the girl in. The Kotzke said, in 9 months you'll have a boy. And they stood at what? So the Kotzke said, you know, when you came in here, I saw that you were surrounded by such an air of indignation and self-righteousness. I'm sorry I had to do that to you. But when I broke you for the first time in your life, you believed in God. You rejected me, and in your heart, Hashem saw that you had hope in Him, and Him alone. You'll have a child in 9 months. Akachav. As I is this. No, we should be zeichet to have each person to have the strength to daven for what we need and to know what we need, and the tefillah should be good, strong, and healthy tefillahs with wings, with good wings to bring to this world shefa bracha for each one of us.